How do you write villains in fiction? Well, stick around and we'll talk about that. Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. So, as I said at the very beginning, today we're going to talk about how to write villains in fiction. And I think it's a really interesting conversation with Marley Himeda. Now, first, let's kind of talk about announcements. So, if you happen to be in the Northern Virginia area and you want to come catch me, I have another library signing at the, oh my goodness, where do I have that written down? Right there. I forget the names of the different branches. It's at the Salem Church Branch Library. If you Google Salem Church Branch, like if you just get that far, you'll find the library. And that's in Fredericksburg, Virginia. And I will be there on Friday, May 31st from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Also, this Friday at 10 p.m., I will be a guest on the Epic Sages podcast. Now, so if you're listening to this the day this podcast comes out, which is Thursday, May 30th, so I'm talking about tomorrow. Tomorrow, I will be at the Salem Church Branch Library, and then tomorrow night, I'll be on the Epic Sages podcast, which I believe is live for their subscribers, for their paid members. And then it gets turned on it's set to public for everybody else after a couple of days. I'm not sure exactly on that. When I have a link next week, I'll share that in the show notes. What else? So last week's newsletter, I shared with the whole world, and you can see that on Substack. I'll share the link in today's show notes, so you can go and read that. I went to a fair last Saturday, which was fun. It was a very small affair, no pun intended, but it was fun anyway. And it was out at the Rappahannock River Campground, and it was a vendor and craft fair. And I don't know, the number of booths was 20, maybe. It was a pretty small affair, and they hadn't really publicized it very well, so, like, it was a little frustrating because, you know, all the vendors we set up, and then we're kind of like, all right, where's the crowd? And a few people came through. But it was fun, and I sold a few books. Maybe most of them were to other vendors, but whatever. Like I said, it was fun. My daughters went with me, and they went and played in the river nearby while I talked to the other vendors and sold books. Actually, I got a couple of prospective podcast guests out of that. One photographer who takes beautiful pictures. Yeah, and I talked to her about coming on the podcast sometime. I need to send her an email to follow up. But I think how she takes her pictures is a kind of storytelling, and I see the common thread there. And then there was another lady who had her booth was a store of children's books, and I'd love to talk to her some more and see what it is she's doing that with her thing. You know, she said that this is how she got her son into reading, and now she's sharing that with other people. So I might have her on the podcast at some point as well. Now, sorry, my eyes are doing this weird thing. If you're watching the video, I'm looking at my notes. But this podcast, I don't have any paid sponsors, but I will say that this is brought to you by my product, which is my book, which you can see on the table here next to me on the desk. Nightshade Unicorn is the name of the series, and Forerunner is the name of book one, which is the only book out yet. I'm pushing for book two by the end of the summer, and this is you'll always get these updates here. Now, yeah, so check out Nightshade Unicorn. Check it out on you can find it on Amazon. You can buy it directly from me at grandhill.media, which if you do that in the near future before I manage to set up drop shipping directly from the printer, then I will be manually shipping that to you, and I'll go ahead and sign it while I'm at it, Yeah. So, speaking of Nightshade Unicorn, I made a big map. Well, I let's not confuse terminology. I took the map that is already included in the front of the book, although it's in color, and the book is printed in black and white inside the cover. But I took that map and I blew it up. And I went back into Incarnate and I exported it as an 8K image, so high resolution image, and I printed it at about 4 foot 6 inches across. So it's pretty big. And I printed that out, I laminated each page, and I duct taped some white foam board together in four sections, and then I used glue dots to stick the map pieces onto the board. And I guess now that I'm describing it, I have to share a picture with you. So I'll put a link to it in the show notes, or I'll put it directly in the show notes if you actually go to the blog to see it. But I'll put a link to it so that otherwise you can have the text to send you where to go. But yeah, I did that so that I can help myself and make it more accessible to develop the story, to further develop the map, because it's a big world map and there are like large nations labeled and a few major cities. But as more things happen over in this corner of the world or in that corner of the world, then I need to flesh out more of the local details in those regions, or more of the regional details. And so that's one thing I'll be able to do with this big map, and I'll be able to write on it with map markers. If any Marine knows what I'm talking about, the those markers that they make you use on maps, which are I guess I should just say fine point alcohol erase markers. They're not dry erase, they're not even water erasable. You take alcohol to erase them. But I also printed out the names of all the characters from that are in book one, and I cut each name out, and now I can kind of walk the characters around the map. And so that I see that helping me to develop the finer details in the story as well. So yeah, that was something I spent a fair amount of time doing on Memorial Day, and a couple of more hours. Yesterday, as I record this, it is May 29th, and so that was yesterday for me. I need to stop saying, I apologize. And yes, I have software that can take it out, but it's kind of tedious to use and it clips it weird. I don't like using that feature. So, I already mentioned the Epic Sages podcast. I'll be that on that tomorrow night. As you're listening to this, it'll be tomorrow night. Or next week if you're not one of their in their in crowd. Now, as far as next week for the podcast, we'll have Noah Healy back on, and kind of continuing the series about blurring lines between science fiction and reality as technology progresses. Now, for today's discussion, as I already said, it's a conversation with author Marla Himeta about how to write villains in fiction. And before we get into it, I have to apologize. Apparently, there was a big storm going on in Hawaii while we recorded, which is where she is based. And apparently that was able to interfere with the connection. Now, at the time, we knew that the connection got interfered with, but I did not know that the platform stopped recording her at that point. So we had this wonderful, beautiful 50-minute discussion. That's 50 minutes discussion. And out of that, 15 made it through intact. And so I will present everything I can. And I will, what I'm going to do is we'll go ahead and start the interview section in just a moment here. And then when we get to that interference, there you'll hear a chime. And you'll hear a chime, and then I'll present the rest of the of my side of the conversation. And if it's not ideal, but that way I can at least share what I can, because I thought it was a great conversation. I'm terribly sorry that I'm not able to share all of her side of it, but it was lost, and that's just reality. Now, since it's late right now and I need to get to bed at some point, and I need to make it easier for myself to edit this episode, then I won't come back after the end of the interview. So again, I'll tell you right now, we'll get through the rest of these announcements, then we'll do the interview. You'll hear a chime, and then you'll hear my side of the conversation, and there might be more intermittent chimes. If I say something, I make a few comments, and then there's a long gap, and then I say something again, I'll cut that gap out and put it to a tiny little chime to signal that there was time that was cut here. And then when you hear the full exit music, then the episode is over and we'll see you next week. But before we do that, a few things to remember. If you're local, come see me at Salem Church Branch Library of the Central Rappahannock Regional Library System on Friday, May 31st from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you are in the in crowd for Epic Sages, then catch me 10 p.m. I'll be the second guest. And then next week, we'll catch Noah Healy back on the podcast. And please remember that this podcast is brought to you by the Nightshade Unicorn Epic Fantasy Saga. So please, I encourage you to go and check out the book. I get good feedback from it. People say it's great. These aren't your stereotypical 7-year-old girl unicorns. Yes, that we see. There is the well-known archetypal unicorn, benevolent creature, possesses magic. That's the foundation upon which I have built in these books. But then there's obviously the Nightshade Unicorn, right? So I've thrown in some grit, and I think it was interesting, right? So check out the book. If you did already read it and you liked it, then give me a review. Go on to Amazon or Goodreads and give me a review, because that really helps other readers to know what kind of book this is and to decide to check it out for themselves. Because right now I have few reviews, and you know how it is. You go onto Amazon and you're like, here's this thing, and it has 4.6 reviews. I mean, 4.6 stars, but it only has 3 reviews. And then here's this thing that has 4.4 stars, but it has 300 reviews. Which one are you going to buy? Probably the one 4.4 stars with 300 reviews, because the few reviews could just be an aberration. So yeah, if you've read it and you loved it, let the world know by means of a review and rating on Amazon or on Goodreads, because that means the world to me. That will really help me, because it helps other people know that this is a good story. So yeah, all that said, And again, one last apology for the truncated conversation. But without further ado, we'll get into the interview, and I know you'll enjoy it. And I will put the link to Marley Jimeta's books in the show notes. So check out her work as well. I think it sounds really interesting, the way she incorporated music into her stories. And the, yeah. Anyway, enjoy, and we'll catch you next time on the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. Welcome to the Grand Hill Chronicles podcast. My name is Don Bishop, and I write as T.S. Pedramon. Today, I'm here with a guest who I've had on before, author Marley Jimeta, author of The Bardic Isles. You should go back and check out that that episode, dear listener. But yeah, she writes historic fantasy is, I believe, the word she likes to, the term she likes to use, because it takes a bit of history and then deviates or builds off of pockets of what we don't know what might have happened. So yeah, Marla, let's say hello. And
hi, nice to see you again. Good to be back.
Likewise, I'm glad to have you back. We had a good conversation about music in fiction, because you have your series, The Bardic Isles, that is entirely focused on music. Mm-hmm. And I have mine with the Nightshade Unicorn, where music plays an important part. It's not the same thing. But we both come from a musician background. But today we were going to talk about how to write villains. And I am eager to hear your take. I don't know if I have very much to offer yet. I'm still somewhat inexperienced at doing that.
Well, we kind of joined the club. I might be president of that club. I don't know. That was not my strong suit when I started writing, for sure. Uh-huh. And I didn't know why, except I didn't like writing about them. My first book of the series, Master of Music, doesn't have any villains in it. So I didn't run into the problem. But the second book, which is just about ready to be released, does. It has two villains. And according to my editor, that those were the weakest link of my book. So I went to work on figuring out why. And my daughter, who's a wonderful sci-fi writer, just asked me a few questions about the bad guy. And I found out I couldn't answer them. I didn't know the answers to those questions. Whereas she couldn't possibly ask me a question about any of my other characters that I wouldn't be able to answer. So I realized my foundational problem was I didn't have a background for the villains. They were just doing what I needed them to do in order for my plot to move forward and my good guys, you know, who I love, to react accordingly. And for me, the biggest breakthrough I had with villains was realizing that I have to treat them the exact same way I treat my other characters. I have to know their background. I have to know what makes them tick, why they're doing what they're doing. What they do has to make perfect sense to them. Even if we're going, oh my gosh, what on earth are you doing? You know, we have to realize that that guy has his reason. And when that reason makes sense, the villain comes alive as a real person.
I think it's interesting how far different kinds of villains, like how far in depth we get into them. In book one of Nightshade Unicorn, you don't actually meet the main villain of the series. They talk about the villain.
Funny. Huh. Yeah.
But there are some minor villains that are a big part of book one. And then there's like the Lord of the Rings, where you don't meet Sauron until the third book. Kind of like there's retellings of 3,000 years ago, and he was at this big battle. But in the movies, you never see his face in the Peter Jackson trilogy, and you never hear him. Do you hear him utter a word? Yeah, you do. Right. Anyway,
sure. I don't remember. Yeah, although I've seen all the movies more than once and read the books multiple times. But you're right. But even then, you get a sense that there's a background because of those, you know, pre stories about him. You realize that he wasn't always necessarily the bad guy, the villain, and that he evolved into one. And that's pretty much what I'm trying to attempt with my villains in book two, is to give them that background so that they make sense. You know, yeah, they have to make sense. Otherwise, they're just cardboard figures doing what you need them to do.
Yeah. What's your take on, let's say you have a story where the villain does get a lot of on-screen time, which is different from Lord of the Rings. Harry Potter was well balanced there, I guess. The villain does get some screen time. It's not too paltry, but it's also not a ton, you know. Mm-hmm. What was my question? So, as far as if you have a villain with a lot of screen time, how much background do you have to show versus simply reveal through their actions or their goals?
Well, I think you have to reveal maybe less if there's not getting very much screen time to do it. You know, I don't think you can take time out in a book where there's not a lot of screen time for the villain. You can't just stop the book and say, oh, by the way, this is his background. You know, I don't like that when books do that. It's so obviously the author talking. So I try to limit that amount of info as much as I possibly can, let the story tell it. But when the screen time is great, then naturally you can get into the, you know, more detail. I've gotten into my villain so much now that I'm actually devoting that entire book to him. So book five is going to be his story. So it'll go back to the past and literally tell just his story. He'll be the protagonist of that story. So that, and that, just writing that, whether I ever publish it or not, just writing that has given depth to my character. With, you know, huge depth to it. I'm about 30,000 words in, and all of a sudden, this guy's a real person to me now. You know, he's not just a convenient bad guy I need, you know.
Yeah.
Because I find it hard to get into villains' minds if they're full-grown villains already, because I don't really want to get into their head. You know, I'd rather get into the head of my good characters. Uh-huh. Easy for me and natural, but getting into the head of somebody who's acting atrociously and causing all kinds of havoc and mayhem for my actual characters is harder for me to do. And if they were a true psychopath with no rhyme or reason to their actions, I don't know that I could do that. That's probably a type of character I probably won't even attempt to do, at least not now. I don't need to right now. My Bardic Isle series has villains that, you know, have a history and have a past and have reasons. But a true psychopath, a Stephen King kind of villain, I don't know if I could get into a head like that. Yeah.
You're making me realize like how big this question is. I didn't even realize how deep or broad this can be before we got on the call, but there's Gollum. If you look at Gollum as a villain, there is a moment where where the story kind of stops and we hear Gollum's history narrated to us via Gandalf, you know? So that, I guess sometimes you can, if it makes sense that you can put it into a character's mouth, then it can work. And then looking at Darth Vader as a villain, spoiler alert, if you've only seen, so Darth Vader is Luke's dad. And the prequel trilogy, okay, so in the end, Darth Vader isn't really a villain, but he's the villain of episodes 4 and 5. You know, he's kind of the primary villain of episodes 4 and 5. But the prequel trilogy is his story. And I didn't get it for years, like how he could just turn bad. And it occurred to me later, it's Darth Sidious's influence. So Anakin mm-hmm. didn't have all of his wits about him, or all of his emotions about him, and he didn't even realize he was being manipulated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So for years, I didn't buy it. I didn't buy the transition, the fall of Anakin Skywalker. So that is a villain story that is interesting, even if you don't like the prequels. It's a truly interesting villain story it's a sad story that you can get into. Whereas Aladdin, Disney's Aladdin from 1994, whatever year that was.
Mm-hmm.
Jafar mm-hmm. is just a bad guy. He just wants bad things. And I don't know if anybody ever wrote his background, but I don't know his background. I just know that he is greedy, and he doesn't care who he steps on or kills to get what he wants.
Right.
So that's a different kind of villain. And I think that's valid. It works in the story. And it's unfortunate that it works because there are people like that. So I agree with you that the way you said it is exactly right, that it has to make sense to that person.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to make sense to us.
At least not right away, or even ever. Like with Jafar, it never does make sense. But wouldn't it be cool if they had written his story? I mean, I'd like to hear his story. You know, that's a character that would be kind of cool to see. How did he become that way? You know, I doubt he was just born like that, you know, or was he? You know, I mean, what is his story? I just think that if an author's having trouble with any character, sitting down and writing that character's story, you may never tell the story. You may never actually put that info in there. But little pieces and little tidbits will come out just in the natural telling of that character in your book, and that will give that character a depth that he isn't going to have if you don't know his story. So even with Jafar, whoever, I don't remember who wrote that, whoever the author of Jafar was, had to know his story to make that believable. You know, even if he didn't tell it to us, he doesn't have to tell it to us necessarily. I didn't really realize until we started talking how similarly I'm handling my villain. I'm not telling his story at all at first when he's introduced. We don't know why he's doing what he's doing. But then later in another book, I'm telling his full story. So, I'm kind of glad I'm doing it that way. I never really thought about it. I really started writing that story for my own benefit. But about 30,000 words in, I'm going, this is a cool story. I really like this. I mean, it's not like I like the guy. You know, I don't like the villain, but I understand him now. I get where he's coming from, and there's a thread in me that can relate to how he went bad and why it happened. And there's a thread of empathy for that and pity for the person, you know, which we feel for Gollum, you know, like when Gollum finally falls into the fire and everything with the ring clutched in his hands, you also feel sorry for him. There's not just at long last, you know, he's burned up. Thank goodness he's gone. You know, it's a feeling of, wow, the poor guy, you know, what he went through and the power the ring ended up having over him. Not all of what happened to him was his fault at all. And that gives you the feeling that I wonder how I would have done in that situation. Would I have become a Gollum, you know? I mean, look at all the nine ring wraiths. Nobody withstood the power of the ring until the hobbits came along. You know, you know, they're the only ones who really managed to survive long enough.
And that was a limited time.
Right. Yeah. That was even not going to always be that way. Eventually, they would have, I'm sure, succumbed to. Even Frodo, you know, would have ended up coming under the sway of that ring. He knew it. You know, Gandalf knew it. They all knew it. But he was, should we say, pure enough of heart, simple enough of heart to withstand it for a much longer time, you know? So it gives us an empathy for Gollum that we wouldn't have had if we never knew that history. So thank goodness Tolkien put the history in there. Let us know what made him tick. You know, that's what makes the bad guys go up an extra level in my estimation when I read it. I want to know what makes them tick in that sense, you know, and not mm-hmm. just go, okay, this is just a flat out psychopath who has no reasons for what he does.
Yeah. And I appreciate that you mentioned that you, you don't want to like write the villain. You want to write your good guys. Cause like,
yeah.
And I imagine that's because you're on their side. And so with, oh, I don't want to give away stuff for Nightshade Unicorn.
your own spoilers. That's not a good idea.
The listeners, Raffo, read it and find out. Read and find out. There are different levels of villains. And I don't mean like, here's the henchman, here's the boss, here's the big boss. There is that.
Right.
But there sometimes a villain is a legend, like a scary story that... that somebody allows to hold themselves back. Like if you're afraid of rejection, maybe you never write your novel and put it on the market. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that fear of rejection is your villain. So there are different levels of villains. And some of them, where was I? Right, so you want to write your good guys, but for your good guys to have an interesting story, they need to have adversity.
Yeah, exactly. And
so with your villain, I don't know what sort of villain you have, but I find as I write the sequel, as I write Nightshade Unicorn Book 2, I introduce another villain, and this person is a rather unsavory character. And I lost you for a moment. Are you still there?
The audio just turned off.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Can you?
I heard you ask. Okay. But you can hear now. Okay. Yeah, I might need to edit that, and I'll make a note. 16.5 minutes. 16 minutes. 16-minute quality check, and it might be just fine. Sometimes our connection will get shady, but it keeps on recording just fine. But okay, so I'll cut this last minute out and marry it up with. Yeah, we just had some connection problems, but now we're back online. So as I was saying that, there are different kinds of villains you want to write with your villains. Oh, right. So I'm writing a sequel, and I introduce a new villain, and this person is a rather unsavory person. And, I want to make the villainy, not convincing. What's the word? Compelling. So like you see this person. I want to illustrate this person's attitudes in a way that kind of grab your attention. And I wonder if you have encountered this. I don't want to write it too unsavory, you know? Like I want to write something that I can let my 12-year-old read. And that's who I am. That's what I want to write. And so I want to know, there's a lot of buildup to my question. What is your take on doing that? Like, how do you make a compelling villain where they create a real problem for the protagonists that may be life-threatening or psychologically threatening or whatever, and still keep it something you can present to a 12-year-old with no compunctions. Do you want to tell us about the villains in your Bardic Isles series, or is that wait and find out? I could see that, yeah. So like in Nightshade Unicorn, like I said, we don't meet the main series villain in the first book. We hear a few words We hear a few words remotely from the main villain, but we do meet some kind of henchmen. They're not exactly henchmen. Like they've heard that there is this movement happening and they want to join the movement. They're on their way there. Main character stumbles into them, and then she has to deal with them and try to evade them. And at first, like I brought them in when I was writing, I hit a wall, kind of third of the way into the book, where I had the concept in my mind for the basic big arc for the whole series, and I had the inciting event occur, and then the main character left home and started her journey, and then I'm like, now what? I didn't know what to do, and I was working really hard to keep a word count goal, like a daily, weekly word count goal, so I couldn't just stop writing. I had to push on. I gave myself a break for a day by writing a short story, just something completely different, to give myself some time to think and work it out. And then I came back and pressed on. And at the time I was like, is this going to be dumb? I don't know. And then she ran into these people, who, you know, their faction was already in my concept for the whole series, but now I had to put faces and names to them. And that was really scary for me, because like you said, I wanted to write about the good guys. Yeah, and I think that's a meeting point between plotting and pantsing, or planning and discovery writing. Where you have an idea of where it's going, and then you realize that you have a plan for this character, but you've created a personality for this character, and that character wouldn't do that thing. And then I think you could take a page from classical STEM engineering, where in cars or in computers, if there is something happening that causes some problem, so much of the time, the solution is to add to the design rather than to figure out some simplified version or some version of the design that is no more complex that evades the problem. Usually, let's say cars. Let's say we have the exhaust gases coming out of the engine, and then they meet, and because of different lengths of the pipes coming out of the cylinders, they're causing not dissonance, but not resonance. They're causing interference with each other, and so it's not optimal. You want optimal power? Okay, so this one actually doesn't add any features. You just you replace the exhaust manifold with a header that has different lengths of, well, I say different lengths. It makes it so that the pipes are actually the same length as each other. So when they come in together, and you have the exhaust coming out, maybe this is more automotive technical than my audience would benefit from. I'll come back to the bottom line. The solution is more often than not adding something to the design to fix it. So if you have a character that wouldn't do that thing, then add something else. Maybe another minor character comes and interacts with them some way that modifies their motivation somehow. I don't know. I guess that's the approach that I would take. That reminds me of the Star Wars prequels again. Like, I don't think the story of Anakin Skywalker becoming Darth Vader was the best carried out. And I think it has to do, well, because I wasn't convinced. Maybe there just needed to be more reminders that he was under heavy influence from Palpatine. But I wasn't convinced, like, Anakin Skywalker's a good guy. He wouldn't do this. He wouldn't do this. It didn't seem true to character. And it, but it was. I just didn't understand the character well enough. So perhaps his character wasn't illustrated well enough with the influence from Palpatine. But that's where I got kind of lost, because the it didn't seem like it was feasible to have him do this thing. But for the record, I also don't like sand. It's coarse. It gets everywhere. It's I've seen memes about Anakin complaining about sand. And Hawaii and Hawaii's sand is better. I've been to Hawaii once. I spent a whole week there. I spent the days rehearsing with the band. So I think I told you I was active duty Marine bandsman for several years. And one year, the MARFOR PAC, the Marine Forces Pacific Band, which is stationed in Hawaii on Oahu, every year they support the American Samoa Flag Day celebration. And in one particular year, they were short on clarinetists, or at least they were projected to be. The one was off at this training course, and one was checking out of the unit, and one wasn't going to arrive. So they borrowed three clarinetists from other bands. And so I was in San Diego, and a buddy of mine and another clarinetist from the 3rd Marine Aircraft Wing band up the road from us flew out. We spent a week in Hawaii rehearsing with the MARFOR PAC band, getting used to playing things the style that they did. Because every band officer has style preferences, and they'll maybe have it played with longer notes or shorter notes or whatever. So we spent a week getting used to their style and getting used to their conductor. And then we went and spent a week in American Samoa, because the flight only runs once a week. Anyway, so I've been to Hawaii, and I was stranded there for a week. Oh no. And then I was stuck in American Samoa for a whole week. Oh no, 2 weeks in paradise. What am I going to do? So I tried surfing. I barely managed to stand up on a board for a few seconds, maybe even only 1 second. I did go surfing with my clarinet with a cheap $20 one I got off of eBay. And I have a funny little video where I'm sitting on the surfboard playing the clarinet, and a wave comes and knocks me over. But I'll send it to you. So all that to say that the sand in Hawaii is better. So I was stationed in California for several years, and that sand is very fine, and that is so annoying. It never goes away. Like, you wash it, you have to wash it again. You have to wash it off again. In Hawaii, it's very coarse because it's younger and it's not so fine. And that's nice because you can wash it off more successfully. Well, now I'm in Virginia, which is beautiful for the forests, but it means we don't get to go to the beach often because we're about an hour from DC. So we're half an hour from the Susquehanna River. Potomac. We're half an hour from the Potomac River, but it's not the same. And we've never been to it. We're half an hour from the Rappahannock, which is much smaller than the Potomac. The Potomac is huge. Anyway, we're far from the beach. We're hours from the ocean. Well, I guess that's probably a wrap for today. I appreciate you coming back on and talking how we write villains. Well, yeah, why don't you stay on for a minute after I stop the recording? We'll remind the listeners where to find the Bardic Isles, where to find your books. Thank you.